Right. Ladies and gentlemen, the James Whale Radio Experience.
Yeah, that's better.
So anyway, here we are again. Rob, of course, is not in my good books today because A, he's a philistine for all kinds of reasons, and B, the original introduction of the program, which was me going to say, this is the James Whale radio show, and have I got a show for you today? He didn't like that. He said, could we do it again? I'm very seldom told by people to do things again.
But you did it anyway.
Yeah, I did it anyway. Now shut up. So anyway, welcome to the program. There's not going to be much time for Rob Job in the program today. I've kind of edited him out of most of it.
Yeah.
but I think we should do tech talk, don't you? Or should we leave that till next week?
I could do tech talk very quickly.
Good. Well, we won't do it now, all right? We'll do it in a little bit. There's a huge story that has just unfolded today, Thursday. What is the date today?
18th, 19th, 20th, something like that. It's January.
Yeah, we're recording this program on the day that big news, the Sun newspaper hasn't dropped page 3.
What? It hasn't?
It hasn't dropped page 3. In fact, the Sun newspaper said, no, they rested it for a few days, and they never said they were going to drop it anyway, and it's back with a vengeance. With a vengeance.
I've got an idea. I haven't seen it. Have they got the woman from the Total Recall with the 3 tits?
I don't know. Please, do not. Do not be disgusting. I mean, we do a show that is actually... a fairly sensible radio show. And for you to say things like that, I find that quite embarrassing.
Well, how can you come back with a vengeance?
I find that quite embarrassing. It's come back with a vengeance, and all those people who were getting very excited that it had been done away with are going to be sadly upset. And in fact, earlier last week, we put out a question on Facebook, did we not?
We did.
And what did we ask?
Well, let me get to that page because I thought I was out.
I'll tell you. We asked, are you going to miss it? Do you think it should have gone sooner? Because this is when we thought it had gone.
Mm.
Right? It hasn't. Could you stay on the same page as me?
Well, you said you were editing me out of the show, so I thought I'd just close the paperwork and put it down on the floor.
Oh, did you? Well, anyway, have you got the page now?
I haven't. I've got the page. I've got the page now. Yes.
Abid Khan. Got in touch. He said, at last, this is the first step towards respect. Really? I don't know where you get that from, but there we are. I've interviewed in my time quite a lot of page 3 girls. I don't think any of them lack respect, I have to tell you. And the other thing I find interesting is, they're not the ones being used either. They know exactly what they're doing. I have to say that I think probably... It is past its sell-by date, I must admit, but the Sun have been very clever. They've suddenly made it look as if it is actually relevant all over again. And they've come off, everybody's been talking about freedom of speech and freedom of expression, and it's kind of got into that, hasn't it? So, Abid, I think you're probably wrong. Jonathan Nelson says, not really, I've not read the Sun. I see, okay. Paul Murrell says, yep, should have gone a long time ago. Well, Paul, you're going to be upset. Richard Bayliss, just got to love the girls. Yeah, well, you're all right then. Mike Cullen, there'll always be tits in the papers as long as the politicians make the news. It's a little easy, really. That's not very clever, but there we are. Pauline Cad, or Cod, says, why don't they also do a page 5 men's man boob page to even up the scores a tad?
I thought they did. I thought they did a page 7 a few years ago.
They do but they don't do man boobs. There is a website for man boobs, isn't there?
I'll go and look it up. Man boobs. Okay.
Yeah. Man. Known as Moobs.
Moobs. How do you spell Moobs?
Moobs.
Moobs.
Yeah. Steve Jones. Hello, Steve. He says, we were seriously suggesting, or were we seriously suggesting, that Samantha Fox, Linda Lusardi, and a host of other Page Three girls had their rights oppressed. I'd say they exploited men, and good luck to them. I see far more women posting just as if not more revealing pictures of male totty on the Facebook walls, and the number of women liking and favourably commenting in quite bold terms, says Steve Jones. I see a minuscule amount of men posting sexually provocative pics of women. And do you know, it's an interesting point, isn't it? If I remember interviewing the Dream Boys, a group of male strippers some years ago, and when they said the thing that really worried them is the amount of security that they needed to protect them, particularly if they were doing hen parties. Is it still like that? I wonder if it is. I don't know.
I think it is, yep.
I don't get invited. Well, you'd know better than me. I don't get invited to hen parties. Susanna says, won't miss it, got my own. One more. Oh dear, I'm choking now. One more. Phil Barron says, the Sun's trying to be all grown up. Just need to sort out their ridiculous headlines and start reporting impartial news. Then we can call it a newspaper again. Well, you see, Phil, they're not trying to change at all. And they never claim to be impartial either. You've got the Sun on the right. You've got the Mirror on the left. And then you take your choice, really. So there we are. The Sun pulled a flanker on all of us. And the story will continue, I'm sure. If you want to get in touch, by the way, don't forget you can get in touch. Email me, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. And if you are a new listener, whether you're in the United Kingdom, whether you are in the United States, even in the Middle East, we have a lot of listeners, apparently, in the Middle East, don't we?
A few have dropped off in the last couple of weeks. We need to try and get them back.
No, we don't. Particularly not if you're from Saudi Arabia and you think that flogging a blogger is the way to live in civilized society. I'm going to say it. I am fed up with this. We bow and we scrape to the Saudis for some strange reason. Well, I don't, but some people do. And they behave like this. I mean, what is it? Going back to the Middle Ages? Why is our Prime Minister not prepared to say to them, this is not the way you behave, and if you behave like this, then, I'm sorry, we just won't buy your oil?
Fracking is the answer.
Fracking is the answer. Tell the Saudis to frack off.
And with that, we'll go to a commercial break.
Would you like a free audiobook? Our friends at Audible are giving everybody a free audiobook just by going to the James Whale Radio Show website, jameswhaleradio.co.uk. All you need to do is click on the Audible link, register, and you'll get your free audiobook. It's a bit like a book club, and remember, you can leave at any time and you still get to keep your free audiobook. So what are you waiting for? Just head over to the James Whale Radio Show website, jameswhaleradio.co.uk, and click on that Audible link now.
So there we are. Listen, I'm sorry. I do know some Saudis, some lovely people. But if their government and if their countries are going to behave in that way, I'm appalled that we in Britain, who seem to get very upset about all kinds of things all over the world, our government do, hasn't said to the Saudis, you cannot take a person out and flog them. Is it something like 1,000 lashes over, 2 years, 50 a week or something like that?
Plus the huge
or 10,000 lashes. Things, yeah. I mean, it just shows that it's not civilized, is it?
Not really, no.
No, and I don't hear it being discussed very much either.
We're discussing it now.
So here, I'd like to know your thoughts on that. jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. You can email me and tell me if you think it's something that... I mean, listen, some people would like to bring it back in this country, wouldn't they?
Flogging?
Yeah. Remember, I always remember years ago when they still birched people in the Isle of Man people were ringing up my show saying, you know, if we brought back the birch in Britain, things would be a lot better.
We could change it to belching.
Belching?
Public belching.
Okay, well, you made light of, I think, a fairly serious situation. I think it's about time we actually started saying to governments who think that beheading, that public humiliation, public flogging, public executions are actually permissible in civilized society in the 21st century are wrong. Quite often from countries who purport to be staunchly religious. I find the whole thing quite strange. So this hopefully will improve our listenership in the Middle East, although it may not. But I don't really care, so it doesn't matter. Okay, now, from a serious subject to a... interesting. Many years ago, I think I did one of the first ever interviews with a man called Russell Watson, and I was told by a chap who tried to get me to do the interview, he's great, he's an opera singer, but he's a comedian and he just works in working men's clubs, and we thought that'd be quite an interesting interview. And of course, that was the beginning of the legend of Russell Watson. Russell Watson, a.k.a. The Voice.
Hello. You're making me Russell. Feel like an old man.
Well, let's go back, because when I was on, I think I was on talk radio at the time in London, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were. I remember we came down to see you several times. Actually, you had it was one of the late night shows, wasn't it? Very late.
Yeah. And who was it? I can't remember. Was it Jeff Chegwin or somebody like that who was actually promoting you at the time?
It was Jeff Chegwin. Yes, we've during the last sort of 15 years that I've been recording, we've used a lot of people, but it was Jeff at the time, yeah.
And I think that was when nobody'd heard of Russell Watson at the time. Nobody had really was listening to what you're doing. And Jeff, who's a great plugger, still a record plugger, at his great age, he should know better, really, said, I've got this great bloke. He's been singing in the clubs and everybody thinks he's going to be, you know, he's going to be sensational. Can you have a chat with him? And you came in and you were the most... unlikely sort of he sold you to me as a, oh, he's an opera singer but with a difference, and he more or less said he's an opera singer stroke comedian.
that was pretty much the way, you know, back in the days when I was doing the working men's clubs, because the audiences were so tough in a lot of the places that you were going, because like now when I go out and I do my concerts now, I'm going out to ticket-buying public, and they want to come and see me perform, and that's why they're there. But back in the days when I was doing the clubs, it was hard graft, and more often than not, they'd not come to watch you sing. They'd come to talk about the latest episode of Coronation Street, have a beer, and talk about the football results. So I was kind of just in the background. I was academic to it all, and getting them on your side meant you had to really, really work the audience and be a bit funny and have a crack with them and all the rest of it. It was hard going.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, of course, that the opera was not the sort of music that would be heard in those sort of clubs in the north at that time, was it?
No, it wasn't. And I think that I remember when I walked into Decca Records, it was 1999 when I got my record deal, and I went in on my own. I didn't have a representation at the time. I had no manager. And I walked into their offices. There was Dick and Steiner, who was the guy that had signed Bocelli to Philips. And there was Costa Pilvecki, who worked with Pavarotti and Bill Holland, all the top guys at that label, you know, the big classical artists over the years. And I remember going in and saying to them, look, if you want a guy... that if you want Hamilton, Smeaton and Smythe from the Academy, you know, he's got all the qualifications, the music qualifications, then I'm not your man. But if you want someone who's been singing in the working men's clubs for the last 9 years and watching the guy on the street kind of responding in a way that you would not expect to classical music. So I go into these places that we're normally used to getting a staple diet of Neil Diamond, Elvis, the Beatles, that type of stuff. And I was singing, you know, Nessun Dorma and Volare and O Sole Mio and Finicky Lee Finicky La. And they were going absolutely crazy for it. And I said, I think we can get into a market of people that haven't experienced classical music before. And they went.
You were right. You were absolutely right. In fact, I remember it must have been 97 to 98 when I first met you, because you didn't have a record deal at the time.
That's right. That's right. I think it was around, I think it was probably 98. We had no deal. I was doing, at the time, I'd done a few sort of sporting things, a few things at rugby union and some football events and things like that. And I was just starting to get myself a name in the industry. And it's funny, you know, because I've been working in the clubs for so long, you get to a point where you actually think, oh my God, you know, this is, it's never going to happen. But around that period, 98, 99, there was all these different things, these different events and so on that I was performing at and being invited to. They all catalyzed, and that culminated in my deal with Decca Records and the release of the first record in 2000.
Oh my God, I just remember, we've been tweeting each other recently about dogs. And oh, by the way, yeah. How is Muffin?
Yeah, she's fine, although we're having to get the carpet in the lounge clean today.
Well, as you know, around about the time we first met, I was diagnosed with cancer. And yeah. After that, I can't remember, but you had a manager or somebody at the time, and I can't remember his name, but he had some Bichon dogs.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes, he did. Yeah.
He told me where he got the dogs from in Manchester. And at the time, we hadn't had a dog for a while. And Mrs. W said, we've got to get a dog. What sort of dog? And I've been looking at different breeds. And I rang this guy whose name just escapes me. I wish I could remember it. And he told me where he got the dog from in Manchester. And we drove from London to Manchester and picked up the dog and then back to London on the same day.
Fantastic.
So, really, we've got dogs in common.
We have, yeah. I mean, it's amusing, really, because we were talking about social media before we went on air, and the biggest response that I get to anything, so I can be tweeting, I'm here in Washington about to sing for President Obama on July the 4th, and I'll get, you know, 40 or 50 favorites. But then I'll put a picture of my dog on, my new puppy, and I get like 150 favourites.
Well, listen, you think that's strange. I could be talking about some interview I've done with maybe a politician or somebody, and you'll get, you know, a few bits of interest and reply. I can put a picture up of the Sunday lunch, and it goes mad. So now we know where we're all at. Hey, did you sing for Obama?
He was in attendance at an event that we did. We didn't get to meet, unfortunately, but he was in attendance, which was a shame, really, because I did a load of stuff in the early days for Bush and Laura Bush. Visited the White House several times and did a private concert there for them. And so, I mean, that period between 2000 and 2003, at the beginning of my career, was amazing because my feet literally didn't touch the ground. There were so many different things happening. It was, when people said, what's the highlight of your career? It was difficult to kind of pinpoint anything and say, this is the thing that stands out above everything else, because I was being dragged left, right, and center. And it was absolutely remarkable. It was an incredible period of time.
But it's what you wanted, wasn't it? I mean, people shouldn't forget, you were working, what, as a builder?
I worked in a factory in Salford. I left school at 16. I had no qualifications. I made a lot of friends, might I add, but I had no qualifications. I spent most of my time, you know, mucking around in class. I was quite a good impersonator, so I'd do impersonations of the teachers and some of my friends and stuff and people who were on TV at the time and they all found me very amusing. I wouldn't recommend it for, you know, as a means to finding a future. Because when I left school, I had, as I say, no qualifications at 16. And I went straight into a factory. The company, interestingly enough, was called Sabre Repetition. So the clue's in the name. 12-hour night shift.
Well, if you'd had qualifications, you know, you may have been a manager somewhere, and you may never have reached the heights that you have.
Well, that's the thing, you see. I think one of the things that the people who bought my records in the early days made an association with was the fact that I was from a working-class background, and my background was not in the slightest bit stereotypical of what you'd expect from somebody who would attempt to sing classical music.
I want to go back in. Well, let me just go back for a second. I just want to know what it was like singing to the American president or being in their presence. I mean, what was the security like? What was it like being taken into those places?
The security, for instance, at say somewhere like the White House is, as you'd expect, there's, you know, you have to go through four or five different steps of security, starting at the gate. You've got your passport, you have other identification as well. So you'll go in through the front gates, then you'll reach the front door. There's like a little box area. You'll walk in through there, again, give your identification. And yeah, it's incredibly strict. But on the days of events, like, for instance, about two or three years ago, we did the Memorial Festival, which is in Washington, and it's around the West Lawn area of the White House. And you can see all the troops and the CIA and all those kind of types of people arriving slowly two or three days prior to the event. So as the event starts to get closer, you'll see the security ramping up until the actual day when it's barriers and barricades and roads closed and everything for those types of events that, you know, say the president would be attending. The security is immense.
Quite exciting, I imagine.
350,000 people at the Memorial Day Festival that we did walked onto the stage. The backdrop is incredible. It's a Capitol building as the backdrop, the famous one with the dome.
Yeah.
And when you stood on stage with that, and there's, you know, 300 or so thousand people in front of you, and you're about to sing, it does give you a real sense of, good Lord, how did I get here?
Didn't you sing for the Pope as well?
Yeah, that was back in 2002. I'd say, you know, when anybody says what's the most incredible moment in your career, it's difficult to pick between, you know, performing at Buckingham Palace and the White House and singing for the Emperor of Japan at the Imperial Palace and having dinner with him and Carnegie Hall, Sydney Opera House, some of these amazing places that I've been incredibly fortunate to perform at. But the one to me that did cap it all was definitely the Vatican for Pope John Paul II. It was just incredible.
Why? What was it like? What was the atmosphere?
When you think about it, it hadn't been long since I'd literally been plucked from the obscurity of the backstreet Northwest working men's clubs, and all of a sudden I'm stood on a stage instead of Fred on the Hammond and Bill on the four-piece Pearl drum kit, I've got a 100-piece Italian symphony orchestra roaring behind me. There's a 500 section choir, 40 red robe cardinals in the front row, 3,500 specially invited dignitaries from across Europe in attendance in the audience, and the Pope in his own private box. And I remember I was stood in the middle of the stage and I started to sing my first aria, which was Adeste Fidelis, which is O Come All Ye Faithful. And I'm looking round, I started to sing, and the first thing that comes into my head is, crikey, 3 years ago this used to be Wigan Road Working Men's Club.
Do you know, I'd have been more worried about whether my Italian was up to scratch.
I didn't ever worry about stuff like that. Everything was, because I just felt so lucky to be there. I look at my career in stages, and the first stage was, I was kind of a little bit like a little puppy dog with a wagging tail, and everything was exciting and everything was incredible. And then the second stage towards 2003-2004, you know, every career, particularly one that's lasted, you know, 15-20 years, has its ups and downs. And that for me was kind of a bit of a down period. Record sales started to drop, and as a result I started to feel like, I don't know, like those types of things, like sales of records and tickets defined me as an artist. Actually, they don't really.
No, you can't listen. You can't, Russell, I've been around now for 40 years. A little bit of reinvention every now and then is probably necessary.
That's the point that I was making, is that my career has had these peaks and troughs. That period was a bit of a trough, and then I came out the other side and things started to move again. And then I got ill, and that knocked the socks off me. But it was the second time that I got ill that I realized, actually, life is good. It's good to be alive. I'm breathing. I'm upright. The sun's shining. It's raining. There's clouds. It doesn't matter. I'm breathing. I'm alive. I've got great people around me now. I have my family who work for me in my business. My sister's my business manager. My nephew works in the office for us. It's good. It's good to be alive. It's good to have had the peaks and troughs. It's the fabric of who I am today. You know yourself that when you do have an instance like that where you get sick, it makes you completely reevaluate everything in your life and reevaluate the people around you, and you realize what and who are important to
you. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, and you realize exactly where you are in the scope of things as well. Let's just go back to your illness for a moment. I mean, in the media, you were sort of wheeled around in a wheelchair from time to time, looking really ill, and most people had already written your obituary. How was that playing out in your own mind?
Well, I didn't know much about it, to be honest, because with the first tumour, I tried to hide it. I didn't tell anybody about it. I was diagnosed in Los Angeles. We were making a studio album called That's Life, appropriately enough, and we're in Capitol Studios. I'd started with these really bad headaches, didn't feel well at all, went to a specialist at Cedar Sinai, and within 30 minutes, the guy had said to me, I mean, the way that they presented it, that the American specialist presented it, he was sat on one side of the desk, I was sat on the other. He looked me in the eyes, he says, "Mr. Watson, you have a tumor, and from the results I'm seeing, it's a big one." I was like, I got this kind of out-of-body experience, and that was the start of the struggle. I had an operation. I didn't tell anybody about it until the night before. Most of my family didn't know because I didn't want to worry them. And I had an operation. 12 months passed. I thought I'd got rid of it. It came back, hit me with a vengeance. I was rushed to hospital in the back of an ambulance, taken into intensive care. And it was during that period that I became aware, particularly around the recovery. I was told that there was BBC news wagons and ITV were all literally parked outside the hospital waiting for the news, except I had other ideas.
I know. It's quite funny, isn't it? When I had kidney cancer, not nearly as serious as yours. And I remember going in after I'd had the tests, and my consultant again sat at the desk. He said, "Well, James, you've got a tumour, mate. And I can tell you, it's the biggest kidney tumour I've ever seen. Amazing."
Right. Just what you want to hear.
And all I could think of saying was, I can't lose any more hair. But, you know, I mean, you deal with it, don't you? You don't have any option. You just have to get on and deal with it.
Well, people, you know, when people say, "Oh, you're so brave," I'm not running into a burning house to save a family of or children. That's brave. I didn't choose to get a big lump in the front of my skull. It just happened. What I did choose to do was fight it. That's not brave. I want to live.
Yeah, you're right. No, I agree so much with what you say, Russell, because people would say that. And you say, look, it's not. I haven't any option. That you just get on with it.
You know, it's not bravery. I don't consider myself brave. I actually consider myself very, very fortunate.
Let's talk a bit about how the classical music fraternity looked upon your singing, particularly in the early days. They weren't very supportive, were they?
No, they weren't at all supportive. In fact, they hated me with a vengeance, and they wanted to crush me as quickly as possible and get me out of the way. But all that did was encourage, you know, the people that came to watch me in the working men's clubs, and more on top of that, to buy my records and show me support, because there was this real sense of them and us that they created by attacking me openly. And basically, the more they attacked me publicly in the press and so on, the more people went, leave him alone, he's one of ours.
No, you're absolutely right. Now, I remember coming up to see you in Birmingham. I don't know if you remember. You were doing a concert of rock music. Do you remember?
Oh, good Lord. Was that Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're doing it from that with a young lady from Steps, wasn't it? Who, well, you were, but I can't remember her name either. It's terrible when you begin to get old, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Well, my memory, since I've had all the bits and bobs done to... my head isn't the best.
In fact, you released an album, you released War of the Worlds, but you did some other stuff, didn't you, that was kind of rocky as well and more contemporary?
Yeah, we've done a few bits and bobs like that, but it was around the time that I wasn't well, and so singing the classical repertoire was really quite difficult because of the pressure that singing the big arias was creating around the front of my skull. I was blacking out when I was trying to sing the big arias because it creates so much pressure in the front of the skull when you're singing those types of high wire numbers that it just physically I wasn't able to take it on. So I had to change the type of repertoire that I was singing and go to a more sort of poppy type style. You know, I did a kind of swing album, I did a soul album, another record that had more rockier tunes on. I had to mix it up.
Do you know what I thought the other day? Queen, of course, have been touring with lots of different guest singers since the death of Freddie. And I thought you'd be great singing with Queen.
I saw the thing that they did on New Year's Eve and on BBC, and I thought, ooh, I'd love to do that.
Well, you never know. Brian May may be listening at the moment. He might get on the phone and have a chat. Let's talk about some of the other bits and pieces that went on before you became ill. After, you know, the 3 years of madness when everybody wanted a piece of Russell Watson and going through that, you also had all kinds of personal problems happening to you that was being played out in the media as well, didn't you?
Yeah, there was my divorce as well that was heavily documented at the time. But, I mean, the thing is, it's what surprises me is it's 15 years on and it's still talked about, oh, he's the guy that left his wife and his children. And I look at that period and think, well, I didn't leave my children because one of them lives with me full time and the other one's with us, you know, half of the week. It's just the way it gets played out. You have options. When you're in the news, when you're in the press and good things aren't being said about you, you have an option, you have choices. You either respond to it or you ignore it. And I ignored it. And the reason that I ignored it is that I felt that the fire was already burning strong enough at that time. To have responded would have meant that I'd have been throwing more fire more fuel on the fire, on the proverbial fire, and that would have affected my children. And I didn't want to do that.
And your kids now are fine, and as you say, one of them works with you. Other members of your family work around you. Have you found now that you've got people around you you can trust? Because I remember talking to you many years ago at a time when you felt that you couldn't trust a lot of the people, and a lot of the people who'd helped you get started, if you like, were not actually playing it straight with you.
It's difficult to comment about whether people were playing things straight or not. You get to a certain point in your career and you look at things in front of you and you think, am I doing as well as I should be for the stage that I'm at in my career? And at that point, I wasn't. And also, you get to stages with management. The one thing that I would say as a generalisation of artist management is, and this isn't attacking everyone, because there are some fantastic people out there in the music industry that manage artists and have had longevity with the artists that they work with. They are genuinely few and far between. There aren't many artists who have sustained a career for more than, say, 15, 20 years that are with the same manager that they were when they started their career. So you don't need to be clever to work out why that might be. The thing is that with regards to artist management, it's one of the few industries where you can call yourself professional but actually have no qualifications at all to back that up. You don't have to go to a university. You don't have to be academic to be an artist management. You just pitch up and say, right, I'm going to manage this person. And I think a lot of the time, you know, you're learning with people as you're going along. So you start with a manager that might be a friend or someone that you've known for a while, and they're actually learning with you. You need somebody on board, I think, that does have a good business acumen in the first instance.
No, absolutely right. I agree totally. Let's look at the future, Russell. Or one question before we look at the future. You still live in the Northwest. You could live in America. You're still a huge star in America as well as in other parts of the world. Why do you choose to live back where you started?
Going back to what's important, and my family and my friends, and I think probably most important of all, maintaining, you know, remember what the newspapers said, he's the one that left his kids. Well, actually, I sustained a career in the United Kingdom, in the Northwest, because I wanted to be around my kids as much as possible. And that's the reason that I stayed here.
Now, let's talk about the future. When are you appearing next?
Yeah, we're actually planning, or we've planned, what will be the biggest UK tour that I've ever done. At the moment, we've got 60 concerts on sale, and we're going to probably add another 20 to that towards the latter part of this year. And the idea with this tour is to go and visit areas and theatres and venues in the UK that I've not been to before. So rather than going to the major cities and doing the usual suspects, the usual venues or the arenas or the Albert Halls, we're going out to the smaller areas that I've never visited before and doing a more up-close and personal type show.
When are you going to start this tour?
The tour starts on the 4th of March. We're in Whitley Bay.
Oh, Whitley Bay.
And then on 6th, we're in York, 7th, Scarborough, 10th, Swansea, 11th, Aberystwyth, 14th, Wimbledon, 15th, Cheltenham, 18th, Cambridge, and so on and so on and so on.
Listen, Russell, it's been great. Thank you very much indeed for the time. Glad to know that you're feeling well. And if you need a good compere at any of the venues, let me know. Until we meet again, you take it easy. Enjoy things.
Thanks, James. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and look after yourself as well. And let's not leave it so long next time.
Take it easy. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
see as you look down all of this love gathered around? I hope you hear what people say. I hope you know the role you play. You were my rock, you were my shield. The space you weave, no one can fill. You held the room, you cast a spell. You'll always be remembered well. And when my days have come and gone, I hope I leave more right than wrong. I want to feel this love I see. When I am gone, I hope there'll be someone to remember me. Though you're not here with me, a part of you will always. I feel you near once in a while. And when my days have come and gone, I hope I leave more right than wrong. I want to feel this love I see.
Ah, there we are, Russell Watson. And what we'll do, Robbo, if we can, we'll get a list of the dates, put them up on our website.
Yeah, or a link to their ticket page or something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Don't forget, by the way, if you're a new listener and you want to find out more, you want to listen to some of the other shows, over 60 hours of shows, jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Also, we've got any copies of my autobiography left?
I've got a few of your signed copies left to send out if people would like them, yes.
Yeah, go jameswhaleradio.co.uk/shop and also peruse some of our sponsors and advertisers as well. Right, I think we've almost finished today, haven't we? Really?
So I'm not going to get to do tech talk then?
Yeah, no, I think you should do tech talk because, you know, I was at this thing, the launch of a new app for Booper, a health app,
yeah,
and bumped into to your big mate, Jason.
Jason Bradbury?
Yeah, from The Gadget Show.
Mm.
So I'm hoping he might be a guest on this programme next week.
Well, he can do tech talk.
Yeah, but in the meantime, we'll have to make do with second best.
Okay, okay. Well, there's bits of news from Microsoft this week, again.
Well, are you going to share them with us, or do I have to tease it out of you?
Okay, I'll tell you. Remember we talked about Windows 10 a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
That's coming out definitely this year, and it'll be free. Everyone can have it.
Oh, well, good. That's excellent. We always like free stuff.
So if you've got a computer with Windows 7 and above, you can download a free copy of Windows 10 for life. The second bit of big news from Windows is they're going to launch a product called the HoloLens, and they're bringing holographic technology to everybody.
Ah, right. That'll be good too, won't it?
So you put your glasses on and you can see objects appear in front of your face and you can interact with them with your hands, move them around. That is coming. That's going to come in the next year or so.
It'll be good when we get glasses. You can put them on and you can see through people's clothes, won't it?
That's called augmented reality.
Is it?
Yeah, but it's not actually them. Oh. It's like they project an image of like a skull or something on their face. You know, it wouldn't be their own skull.
No. Right, let's finish off with question time for me, from you. And if you want to send us questions for next week's show, go on our Facebook page or just email them to jameswellradio@gmail.com. What questions, if any, have you got?
I'm going to have to find that page. Hang on, give me a sec.
It's all about... Do you know, it amazes me how unprepared you are.
Yes, I am the world's worst producer.
Well, I didn't like to say that, but if you could hurry it up, I have got fish to fry.
You've got fish to fry? Is that what you're having for your tea?
That's just an expression.
Okay, sorry, I'm just wasting time because I'm trying to find this page. I've got a page on page 3, girls. That's on page 4 for some reason.
Yeah, well, just don't tell me what you've got. Just go to the page.
Well, I can't find the page. Hang on a second.
All right, I'll do it myself. I always thought I'd use you, I'd let you ask the questions, but, you know... Well, no, it's better for you to get the questions and ask me the questions.
I've got it. It was on page 3.
Yeah. Okay, so have we got any questions for me this week?
Yes. Ram Is? Isis?
Yeah.
We call him Ram. He needs to know what to do if you're abducted by aliens.
Just smile sweetly, and whenever they ask you a question, say yes.
My advice would be relax.
Yeah. You missed out one on top there, didn't you?
You want me to ask that?
Yeah.
Okay. Remember, listeners...
Come on, get on with it.
Okay. Gary, I won't say his surname, Jehovah's Witnesses, harmless or dangerous?
Depends whether you take them seriously or not. I suggest probably harmless. And we did have a spate of Jehovah's Witnesses around my way, and I found the best thing I could, you know, I looked out the window, I could see one coming down the road, and they come down in pairs, very smartly dressed. I just stripped off and opened the door naked.
I had them once.
I've never ever been troubled by them again.
I had them once. They came to my gate, and I was actually in the garden at the time, and they started talking to me, and I just pointed to my car, which has got a personalised number plate on it with 666 on it, and they walked away.
Oh dear, yeah. Anyway, on we go.
Okay, Brandon, should I learn piano or guitar to get the chicks?
Definitely the piano. It used to be the guitar, Brandon, but now get yourself a piano and you'll look really hot.
It's easy to learn the guitar if you know how to do a piano.
Yeah, but listen, let's just tease him a bit and give him something hard to do.
Jackie Gant is still in hospital. They won't let me out.
Oh, Jackie, well, I hope you'll be okay before long. And listen, we're thinking about you.
We are. Shane Wilson, when are you having David Icke on as a guest?
Well, we talked about that, didn't we? Okay, why don't we do that? Why don't we do a special with David Icke? We'll have a chat with him, see when we can get him on.
David Icke, make a note of that. Andy, how do I get rid of solar panel salesmen?
Well, actually, it says, how do I get rid of this bloody solar panel salesman? Well, I think invite him in, clean him up. If he's bloodied, you need to make sure that he's okay. Look after him.
Oh, dear. David Hughes. Well, it's a bit irrelevant now. Are there any other page 3s out there?
Well, there is now. Well, there are, of course, there are other papers who copied it, and a lot worse as well in various places. But the original, and still very much there, The Sun, has page 3 back.
Mm.
That's it. We got to get out of here. Thanks to Russell Watson, and thank you to all those of you who've tuned in. Tell your friends to join us at jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Tell them where you listen to us. Our thanks to Talent GB for putting us out as well. Audio Boom, and many other places that you can listen to us. What we need, you know, what we need, Rob, is an app.
An app. Yes, I'm working on the app.
Next week, see you later.
To the James Whale Radio Show. For more information, visit www.jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Why not check us out on facebook.com/James Whale Radio Show or follow James on Twitter @TheJamesWhale. James Whale, the voice of reason.